The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday. So let's get to the weekend and get started with the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. Hope you're well and good. You know, my wife threatened to leave me because of my obsession with the monkeys. I thought she was joking. And then I saw her face. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
And then I saw her face. Here we go. It's an ipso facto Guns N' Roses / Velvet Revolver reunion as Slash is here today. But first, his compatriot, his partner, delivering the goods with the joke of the week. As always, thanks to Duff McKagan. We're raising a glass to him tonight. He's going out with Slash and Guns N' Roses next month. They're going to the Philippines, Jakarta, Taiwan, Hong Kong. And for the first time ever, they're going to Honolulu, Hawaii. Tickets are on sale for that right now. Guns N' Roses still living large. And speaking of GNR, Slash, the architect behind the band, is back here on Talk is Jericho. He took some time out of rehearsals with Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators to give us a call and talk about his new album, Living the Dream, with Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. All of it got started this week. The album was released a few weeks ago. The tour is on right now. Brent Fitz and Todd Kearns, of course. Talk is Jericho alumni. They're the Canadian contingent. We've done Canadian music and Canadian television shows. So very, very cool. We're going to talk about them upcoming. Living the Dream, talk about the making of that. Of course, it's available now on all streaming and download platforms. We talked about Guns N' Roses, the reunion, what it's been like, what the future may hold for the band, whether they're going to play more music, more concerts. Slash is not ruling anything out. You hear exactly what he has to say about possible new Guns music, more tour dates, talking about playing with Carole King, talking about playing with Michael Jackson, talking about dinosaurs, of course. You can't have Jericho and Slashy in a room and not talk about dinosaurs. We are amateur paleontologists, but we are professional podcasters and rock and rollers. No more yapping. We're going to get right to it. Here he is, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, the legendary Slash, returns to Talk is Jericho, episode 499. Let's get started right now. Hey, dude, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good, dude, good. Let's just jump right in here. I know you're doing a lot of press, but it's cool that you are you're back with the Canadians, man.
I have a rehearsal with those guys right after I get done with you.
Well, that's cool, man. I know that you were saying before, like a couple years ago, that you had so much fun with those guys. It was like one of your favorite bands to be in, because the Canadians had the lack of ego that a lot of other bands do that you've played with in the past.
Well, you know, I mean, the Canadians being Todd and Brett, I mean, they're so laid back. They're so easygoing and you know, dare I say, just overly sort of considerate and conscious of other people. You know, it's different for me. But yeah, they're amazing players, and all they want to do is play. But not only is it, you know, not only, but they're very conscientious about, you know, how they play and coming up with their parts and just, you know, just generally doing a great job. So it's probably been one of the, you know, easiest kind of working situations that I've been in, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because I was talking to Todd, like, last year about some stuff that I wanted to do this year. And he was saying, well, I've got Slash commitments, you know, from September or whatever it was. So you always had this planned to go back with the Conspirators and with Miles, even when you were in the midst of this massive stadium Guns N' Roses tour.
Well, I mean, what happened was when I signed on, you know, on the Guns thing, which was, you know, fucking an awesome thing unto itself. Mm-hmm. But I knew then that I still, at some point, was going to come back and do the Conspirators. I mean, I didn't know how long the Guns N' Roses tour was going to go. None of us did. We just sort of got into those first two shows, and then we did a U.S. tour, and then it just snowballed. But at some point, there was going to be a break, right?
Right.
And so, you know, that was just always in the back of my mind. So I was 100% focused on Guns, but, you know, also knew that when there was a reasonable size break that, that warranted enough time to be able to go in and rehearse and well, basically start writing and rehearsing and pre-production, whatever you call it, and then get in the studio and record the album. So that came in December of 2018. So I had from then until May to do it. So, you know, everybody did the Christmas break, and then that mid-January I got together starting with Brent and Todd just to sort of revisit some riffs that we had from 2015, which was at the end of the World on Fire tour, and we accumulated some material. And then also, I over Christmas, I'd written some new stuff, so we got into that. Then Frank came in, who, this was his first record as a recording member of the Conspirators. So we sort of went through all the material again for him and let him write his, you know, get his parts together. And then Miles came in and we started, you know, like pre-production in earnest. Then Elvis came and we just went in and recorded the album. So it went pretty quickly. By the time it was mastered, I was in rehearsals with Guns ready to go out on the European run.
It's interesting. So it's cool that you're letting that Frank is actually playing parts on this record, because when you're thinking about, you know, a Slash record, you must really trust him and really know him now to allow him to contribute. Because I'm assuming most of the time you would just play everything yourself and just kind of show him how it goes for the live stuff.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, it takes a second. You know, the guitar is a sensitive, you know, I mean, it's a sensitive subject in a band like this, right? Where, you know, I'm doing all that, because it's got to be compatible with what it is that I do and all that. And so just working with Frank over the whole World on Fire tour and really sort of doing a rapport musically, by the time it came to, you know, time to do this record, I totally felt, you know, that it was time for him to come in and start doing the guitars. But, you know, he did such an amazing job. I was so, you know, I hate to sound like condescending, but I was so f***ing proud of him. You know, he did such a good job, and he did, and he worked quickly. You know, I didn't know, some people are slow in the studio, just, you know, like take after take or whatever it is, because they're not used to it or whatever. And he's not somebody who's done a million records, but he just came in and banged it out. It was great.
Well, and talk about a lot of pressure for him too, when you got Slash over your shoulder, making sure you don't f*** up, right?
No, I didn't. I just let him do his thing. I never had to crowd anybody's space when they're doing their parts. But, you know, I come in at the end of the night and check to see what things sounded like, you know.
But then it's really cool to me, because, like I said, like, and we'll talk a little bit about the Guns thing, when you mentioned you didn't really know how long it was going to go, what it was going to entail. But, I mean, you guys are still have shows coming up, I think, like in, I don't know, Philippines or Beirut or where the hell you're going. But then you're going straight out again with the Conspirators. It's like you just never stop, man. You're just on the road from one band to another constantly.
Yeah. but fortunately for me, I mean, I actually like that. I like working like that.
Right.
And I like being, you know, I mean, that's the best way to put it. I just like being in a situation where I'm jamming all the time. And if I'm going from one project to another project, that's fine with me, as long as I just, you know, I'm playing. And obviously, I mean, this run with Guns that we just did was probably one of the most positive experiences that I've had in my professional career, even over when the band first started. So, you know, it's something that I want to continue doing. And in order to do that, I have to be able to facilitate that. And I want to keep doing the Conspirators. So we just have to make them both work. And it's taxing and time consuming, but it's cool, you know. It's worth it.
Is it fun? Is it challenging to play with one group of musicians for the last 2 years and then go straight into playing with another group? Is there differences that, or is it kind of, does it keep you sharp as a player to kind of have a whole different?
It definitely keeps you sharp, because there's no excuses that you can make if
right,
you
right.
walk in the room and you can't handle it. So it definitely keeps you sharp. I mean, the cool thing about, you know, I was talking about the Conspirators and what an easy bunch of guys that is to work with. But this, the Guns N' Roses lineup that we've been doing this last couple of years with is the same kind of thing. It's sort of amazing because, you know, Guns N' Roses history. But suddenly there's this really, really well-oiled machine that's like super functional. So, you know, the one thing you don't have to worry about is not, it's like if I walk into the room, we need a van and to get to work, everybody's ready to go, you know? So that's a blessing, because when it's disorganized or not everybody's sort of together, then it makes it impossible to do this much work, you know, because they're adding up. So I don't have that issue to deal with, which is cool. And they don't have to deal with it with me.
You know, it's interesting when I think about like some of the kind of the bad blood that I had over the years with different guys in my job. And now, you know, here we are 20 years later, and sit down and go like, why were we so f-ing mad at each other? Anyways, like you don't even really remember why you had a problem in the first place. And you mentioned for you guys with Guns N' Roses, how it just has been one of the most positive experiences. Was it the same type of vibe? Like once you guys actually sat down and had a chat, you're like, and why were we so mad at each other for so long?
I don't think there was definitely some new ground to cover as to some of the, you know, catalysts for causing, you know, and, you know, a lot of it was not really between he and I. It had to do with outside parties.
As always.
That were part of the entourage, so to speak. And that explained a lot. But then there was different things between he and I that, you know, we needed to talk about because of how we handled those outside sort of influences. So, yeah, I mean, it's all very personal and stuff that it was just good that we finally did talk because, I mean, shit, man, it was 20 years that we did not say one word to each other, you know?
And that's what I mean. And it's kind of like, what were we, like, okay, fine, but now 20 years later, it's almost like the Police when they reunited, you know?
You're talking about two of the stubbornest people you could ever come across.
Well, I'll say this though: when you guys finally did get up and rolling, was it bigger than you expected? Were you thinking it was going to go this long and have this much of a buzz?
Well, I think that was part of the beauty of it. Is I didn't have any expectations. I think it was more a positive thing for me to go in and just be in the room with, you know, with Axe and Duff and actually just play, you know, and you know what I mean. And so that was, in and of itself, the coolest thing about it. And so the desire to go and do those couple shows at Coachella and the warm-up shows, that was just going to be a blast. It wasn't really about how big the response was going to be or how well it was. I don't think we were thinking about that. It was just fun to go up and get together and play. And then all of a sudden the response became something that we had, you know, at least for me personally, I had no idea it was going to be like that. And that was throughout the whole tour. So it was pretty special.
So let's talk about that first gig that you guys played at the Troubadour, the first one in like 23 years or whatever. But before we do that, Slash, I want to talk to my sexy beast, Talk Is Jericho listeners, because you guys, you need to download the DDP Yoga Now app and start your free 7-day trial, okay? WWE Hall of Famer Diamond Dallas Page is so sure his killer program is perfect for you. As a matter of fact, I'm so sure the killer program is perfect for you. He's giving you 7 days to try everything for free, okay? So you get to do the workouts, and there's over 100 to choose from. You can even do a live workout with an instructor from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. Talk Is Jericho alumni Nita Strauss was there earlier this week after doing an Alice Cooper show. She went with her boyfriend Josh, and they did a whole DDP yoga workout. That's the way DDP is. Even after gigs, he's going to get in there and work with you at the Smyrna Performance Center in Georgia, where we filmed the Judas video. Dallas has everything there, though. You can also check out the recipes and nutrition tips that he's got on the app to help you eat healthier, which is important. Abs are made in the kitchen. Hello. You can hook up your Bluetooth heart monitor as well to track the calories you burn, your overall progress. You can even access Dallas himself to give you a little extra push on those days when you just aren't feeling it. You know you need a little bit of motivation. Dallas can go, hey, bro, get into it. You can also watch Dallas's new real-life reality series. It's called We Can Rebuild You. The series shows the work that Dally's been doing with disabled vet Jerry Cameron, who wants to be able to walk again without using his walker. And I can tell you he's nearly there because Dallas already has Jerry doing the DDPY workouts without the walker. I've got the DDP Yoga Now app on my phone. Rich Ward from Fozzy has it on his phone. He does it quite often on tour. We both do it, as a matter of fact, whether we're on the bus, outside the bus, in the hotel. I just did it in Japan so that I was ready and able for the surprise beatdown attack on Evil. And you know I'm going to be doing it. Get ready for the big match on November 3rd at Power Struggle, Evil versus Jericho for the IWGP Intercontinental Champion. DDP Yoga is going to help me get there. And DDP Yoga is not just helping me, okay? Look what it did for Mick Foley. Mick lost over 100 pounds. Have you seen him lately? It's amazing. He's looking and he's feeling great. Dallas's program also helped AJ Styles, Gold Dust, Jake the Snake Roberts, Edge, Scott Hall, so many more. Now, I know you've heard me say it over and over again, but DDP Yoga really is a kick-ass cardio program. It's going to improve your flexibility, strengthen your core. I mean, look what I'm doing every night on stage and what I'm still doing in the ring for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Hotter than I've ever been. Ready to kick Evil's ass on November 3rd at the Sumo Arena in Osaka at the Edion Arena. But all of these gains that I've been making are 100% because of DDP Yoga. So start your free 7-day trial now at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Listen, you got nothing to lose. And once you're hooked on DDP Yoga, then take advantage of this special deal on an annual membership Dallas is giving you. Check this out, 20% off. So you get 7 days for free and then 20% off an annual membership. And all you got to do is go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And if you want to meet Dallas in person to tell him how much you love the workouts, or maybe even do live workouts with him, you got to come at Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager in just 2 weeks. We leave 2 weeks from tomorrow, or you can meet up with Dallas if you live in the Rhode Island area, and the Rhode Island Comic Con, November 2nd through the 4th, that's upcoming as well. So get on board the DDPY program, do DDPY yoga on the Jericho cruise, or do it with ddpyoga.com/Jericho and get that app. I want you to start your free 7-day trial. It is worth it. Trust me. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. It's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get in the best shape of your life, mentally and physically. Go do it now. It worked for me, and I'm telling you, it can work for you. Oh, yeah.
The history of rock and roll is littered with the unexplainable.
If he wasn't going to get off the groggy, it was probably going to kill him.
The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone with Richard Serrett. Listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Westwood One podcast app.
Let's talk quickly about that first gig that you guys played at the Troubadour. I mean, what was that like to get back on stage? I mean, you played with Duff, obviously, in Velvet Revolver, but to get back up there with Duff, Axl, and Slash, were you nervous, or was it just business as usual? Felt like nothing had changed?
It was definitely not like, you know, a day in the life. It was definitely, like a major kind of event going down there. And I think it really sort of presented itself as far as like how surreal the whole thing was with its sound check. Mm. Because, you know, when you sort of pull up to the Troubadour reminiscent of, you know, many f-ing shows at the Troubadour back in the 80s and pulling up, and it's the same place that's hasn't changed much since I was a little kid. And I used to go there with my parents. So it was like, you know, so you get there and then it's a Guns N' Roses gig, and we haven't played there in that capacity since 1985. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, that sort of sunk in, and it was a little bit of a trip. And then I also realized that this is definitely Guns N' Roses of 2018. They have more gear in here than they can possibly really handle. But, you know, and so that's how it sort of started off. But then when it came to actually being on stage, I don't know, there's a certain kind of gear that you go into that's not really thinking about any of that stuff. And you're just on stage and you're playing, and it's about you. Audience that's immediately in front of you, and you know, you go to a different place.
What gigs did you see with your parents at the Troubadour? Do you remember?
Well, in the 1971, 72, you know, that whole period, my mom did a lot of. Both my parents worked with a lot of artists that performed at the Troubadour. So it was Jody Mitchell, Helen Reddy, Linda Ronstadt, Neil Young. There was a bunch of different people that. The Troubadour at that time was sort of like the Renaissance Club. It was where Carole King and James Taylor. So that's where, like, that was probably the most prestigious club in LA, because it was where all the sort of singer songwriters that were making really big waves with hit records at that time. That's where they were all playing, and so those were the kind of artists that we were Yeah, I was seeing down there.
Didn't you? As a matter of fact, you did. You played on a record with Carole King, like a live record of hers or something, right?
It was a studio record, and I'm not exactly sure. I think it was, I can't remember. It was like 1998 or something around there. And it was really cool.
I bought it because you were on it. And it was really cool.
I think it was called Hold On to Love or something. And it was great because she, you know, being the great songwriter that she is, she took me in and she gave me a lot of compliments about how I sort of work within the structure of the song and blah, blah, blah. And at the same time, she was also giving me advice on stuff, how to work with this particular song and in terms of how her vocal parts were and all this kind of shit. So it was definitely one of those great experiences that you remember for the rest of your career. But then I went on and did a show with her at the Jazz Festival, which was a couple shows, actually, that I did with her. So it was very cool.
No, dude, this is it. It's called Carole King in Concert. I just Googled it right now, and you played with her on that record. That's the one that I have. I think it's maybe Make the Earth Move or something along those lines. It's like you're bringing the sounds of Carole King to a whole new generation.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know about all that, but you know, it was definitely a personal benchmark, I think. You know?
Well, you always played with a lot of different people, like, you know, with what you're talking about, Michael Jackson and all those different Lenny Kravitz. Who's your favorite collaboration? I mean, it might be hard or unfair to ask your favorite, but is there one that stands out for you that was really really extra cool?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been asked that before, and it's like there's always something to be gained from any of them. They're all fun and they're all different. And I do it because as a musician, but also as a huge fan, you know, like I'm a fan of people I admire and people who I respect in the industry. And, you know, I try to keep it cool when I'm in their presence, but, you know, I'm really there as a, you know, overly excited fan. And I'm honored to do it. So they're all really, you know, great experiences. But I'd have to say that Iggy Pop is my favorite.
Wow.
Because I've worked with him so much, and he's just such a great rock and roll icon who has a very, very unique, identifiable, you know, like his talents or something. I mean, it's the same with Michael Jackson, but Iggy just works within a certain something that really appeals to who I am as sort of rock guy. And I love his spontaneity. I love the way his mind works and his lyrics and all kind of shit like that. And just, you know, I mean, he just represents a kind of lamb-out, in-your-face rock and roll that is uniquely him, and I was heavily influenced by it. So,
does a guy like that, or, you know, you and I have talked about Keith Richards quite a bit and the Stones, like, does it give you, I mean, it gives all of us inspiration to see them still up there kicking ass and still looking cool and all that stuff? Because there's really no rules now as to when you have to stop playing music, like if we worked in a factory or something where you got to retire at 65 years old or whatever it may be.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think anybody, even if you go back to somebody like, blues guys like B.B. King, did it up until right until he started, you know, up to his death, and Jerry Lee Lewis and all these guys who influenced our influences. They, you know, nobody ever really stops. The only people that only start to really look at it in the perspective of age are kids, you know, because any kid who's within like between 13 and 21 looks at anybody who's 30 or older as being, whoa, that's cool. You know, I remember being like that. I remember being 16 and thinking my mom's boyfriend who was 23 was old. Right. So, right. You know, so there's that. But I mean, when it comes down to it, though, people sort of doing what it is that they do in music, I mean, it doesn't work with sports, but in music, you know, they just go, they do it as long as they feel passionate about it. And that's pretty much, since it is pretty much all we do, you know, you feel passionate about it until the ticker stops ticking.
Right, yeah, until you don't. I was going to ask you, when you got back together with Axl and Duff, how did you guys decide kind of the rest of the band? you know, with Richard Fortus and Frank and all those guys. Because one thing that people forget about when you're talking about, we want the classic lineup of Guns N' Roses, blah, blah, blah. Axl had been playing with those guys for 10 odd years. So I thought it would be very strange for him to just fire all those guys too, you know?
Yeah, well, that's obviously a bigger, you know, that's sort of a bigger subject considering all the different things that went on during that period of trying to sort of figure all that out. But, you know, all things considered, yeah, you're right. I mean, when certain things that we were sort of trying to get sorted out didn't work out, Axl Van had he been working with literally for 15 years. And so I felt really comfortable with Richard, and Frank was great. And so it wasn't rocket science to keep all that together. And just the other stuff that we were trying to do didn't work out. And so, you know, I'm not going to get into all that, though.
Yeah, no, I wasn't suggesting, because I said it was a great band, because to me, it's almost like we mentioned the Stones. When you go to the Stones, you know, it's Mick, Keith, Charlie, and Ron on the poster, but there's seven other guys in the band, and girls, and backup singers, and horns, and I kind of felt that with Guns N' Roses. You know, you had the core guys, but then you had all these amazing musicians that made just the sound that much fuller and better. It was actually pretty cool to see.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you do, it's something that you do that needs to be done. And then also, like, even from the 90s, we didn't have the original lineup, you know? So
That's right.
It wasn't something that we were like, oh my God, you know, about.
How was it playing with Richard? Did you guys have musical chemistry fairly quickly?
Richard's great. Richard, you know, I mean, I don't know all the guys that played guitar with Guns prior, you know, to my coming back. I've never met, well, except with the exception of one, I haven't met any of them. And so Richard was the first one. He was there when I, you know, at rehearsal, and it just, we hit it off automatically. He's one of these guys who's an amazing technician. He's very knowledgeable about guitar techniques and guitar, all kinds of shit, guitar, right? But he has he's rooted in, you know, the same kind of rock guitar and the same kind of influences that I am. So we spoke the same language. So, all in all, working with Richard was really sort of a boon for me, because I was doing my thing and he was doing on his side, like, you know, covering it all and also sort of pushing me as a guitar player at the same time. So it was one of those beneficial relationships that was established really early.
It was a cool mix too, because you got your slimy, slithery style, and like you said, he's a little bit more technical with the sweeps and that sort of a thing if he needs to be. So it was a cool kind of mix between you guys.
Yeah. So it worked out well. I mean, it's almost like it was, you know, like what's the best way to put it? It's sort of like meant to be kind of thing, because it could have been somebody else, or it might not have worked, or, you know, whatever. But it just happened to work perfectly from the moment I walked in. So,
How was it for you when, because you guys were already back together when Axl got the gig singing for AC/DC? How did you guys feel about that, and what did you think about that whole lineup of AC/DC?
Well, I mean, it was like right before we even, you know, really started. So I mean, it was one of those kind of, I mean, what do you do? Your buddy who you've grown up with just got asked to do probably the coolest, preeminent, you know, rock and roll gig you could possibly ask for. And he went and pulled it off. Like, Duff and I flew out to London for one of the shows. And,
oh, right on.
Cause I didn't know how that was going to go. You know, I mean, I know how badass Axl is, but I just, you know, AC/DC is AC/DC, so I just didn't know. So we went out there and went to this big Olympic Stadium, whatever it's called, and it was just awesome. And especially like the Bon Scott stuff, that was really, really good. And so, yeah, and then he came back and he just jumped right back into rehearsal with us and off we went.
Did he learn some stuff from working with Angus that you saw a little bit of a difference in Axl?
Like, I mean, I'm sure he did, but I just, you know, there's nothing we actually sat down and discussed. And I've known Angus a pretty long time, so I know how Angus works, so I know that Axl had definitely adapted to that situation, because the AC/DC sort of machine works a certain way, but there was never any kind of issues. It was like Axl was just totally into it and just did their thing. Sounds cool.
Yeah, it was cool. And I thought, like you said, like, you know, I thought Brian Johnson sang the Bond songs because it was part of his gig, whereas Axl has that Bond element to him. You know, he's like, he embodies the spirit of Bon Scott during those tunes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was cool. And I was noticing too,
definitely an influence,
because when you guys did your tour too, you guys were always on time. I think you went on a minute early both times I saw you, which was not the same as the Guns N' Roses of old.
You know what? We don't even discuss any of that because it's just the way it worked out. And we'll just leave it at that. I have to say, two years on the road, you know, on this tour, and not one hitch the entire time. You know, at least nothing that was insurmountable, you know?
Dude, that's awesome, man, when you think about that. Like you mentioned, like, it took 25 years or whatever, but it's kind of, it was something that not just for you guys, but all fans of rock and roll in general were so happy to see that and to see, like, how much fun you guys were having. Like, it really rubbed off, and it was great. It was great for the state of rock and roll overall, I'd say.
Oh, that's cool. I hadn't really put it in that kind of perspective, but we definitely had a good time, so... you know, and I've seen other situations, similar situations, and it's, you know, oftentimes not as harmonious. So, you know, it's sort of like a blessing. I've said this before, sort of a blessing that it worked out the way that it did. But, you know, and I'm glad that it actually happened because, you know me a long time, and there's never once that I ever alluded to that even being a possibility. Yeah, so
all I remember is when we talked and I just said, man, the chance that you guys could go back and play stadiums where only a handful of bands can do that as a musician is something I bet you always in the back of your mind you think about. And whatever the reason was, you guys did it, and it was amazing. So very, very cool to see. I want to ask you a couple questions as we wind down here about our favorite subject other than rock and roll, which of course is paleontology and dinosaurs and that sort of thing. Lots of stuff going on right now in the world of new species being discovered and new countries that have found all of these new fossils, and just kind of getting your updates on what you've been reading about lately.
There's a lot of stuff. I mean, I went to Tyrell Museum and checked out the notosaur that is on display over there, the one that's like perfectly preserved and mummified and all of that, which is pretty awesome to see. But there's so much stuff happening on an almost daily basis now. It's hard to even keep up with. They just found a new theropod. It's a totally new species of theropod, and I think it was in China. Of course, tons of shit coming out of China all the time. But you know, this one's a decent sized theropod. I forgot what it's called. But there's a lot of stuff. You know, I can't even remember the names of everything because they come out so often, and not to mention the simple fact that they make the names way more complicated than when you were a kid.
I know, right? I was reading a couple.
It's intentional. I really think it's intentional. I think they do it just to f*** with the kids.
So you can't pronounce them? Because there's that cat. Have you followed Steven Brusat, the stuff that he's been doing?
Who's that?
He's a cat from like Illinois, and he's like a disciple of, I can't remember what his last name is, but he's been finding all these new species. He's kind of like the hot shot now, because he says that the biggest thing is that all of these new countries are opening up, like for example, like Mongolia and China and places where they wouldn't really allow, you know, a North American paleontologist to go into. So he's finding, like, I think he's found like 10 or 12. He's in there with Paul Sereno and those guys.
This is the guy that just, I know what you're talking about. This is the guy who actually just discovered something just 2 weeks ago. Somewhere in the U.S. though. Mm-hmm. But I know what you're talking about. But it's true. They, like all the borders have opened up to let scientists come in and sort of excavate pretty much in all the places where it was, you know, almost next to impossible to get into. So it's a really crazy time for the discoveries are like I was saying, I mean, literally, you know, there's something every other week, if not every week.
Which is so amazing, you know, after all these years of studying. I guess that's just because of the new countries that are opening up, or is there new techniques in finding them?
Well, no, I mean, as time goes by, you know, erosion happens, and the more amount of ground we're able to cover because of all the new territories, obviously you're going to find stuff, but there's just, there's a constant state of religion. So there's just, I mean, if you think about it, the amount of species, okay, not to mention there's the amount of species, but not to think about all the amount of living animals that were on this planet that no longer exist, that died. You're going to, as the erosion happens, not everything is preserved, but you're going to find a lot of stuff that is underneath layers and layers of rock that's being exposed. So, yeah. It's just going to keep happening.
Well, yeah, it's like you said, too, because I think also, too, like if you're talking about China, now there's a lot of Chinese paleontologists coming up through the ranks that didn't really exist. I think China kind of frowned upon that thing because I know that they found the Pinocchio. Yeah. Did you hear about the Pinocchio Rex?
Yes, yeah, I did.
Like a different type of T-Rex from Chinese.
It's just got a really long snout.
Right, but it's a different species of T-Rex, though.
A different species. Yeah, yeah. It's part of the family, but it's a different species. So, but the thing about China is that it is definitely one territory that has turned up the most feathered dinosaurs, you know, out of anywhere else. And they're constantly, I mean, I think that China basically has the largest amount of new species on the planet in the last 20 and 30 years. So it's, you know, for guys like us, it's just like, woohoo. You
know? Well, and that's another thing that Brissette found. He found the did you hear about the Yark Vara? It's not spelt like that. It's spelt like D-E-A-R-C-M-H-A-R-A, but it's pronounced the Scottish, like, Gaelic term of Yark Vara or something like that. It's a giant marine lizard.
Right.
He found one of those in Scotland. So like you said, yeah, it's woohoo because of all of this shit that's turning up. it's actually really cool, man. It's really cool.
It is really cool. And I've been going around to, wherever we're traveling, and I'm going to all the different museums just to see all this new stuff on display next to the old stuff that's been there for decades. And it's cool to see such a sort of like an electricity to all this new stuff that's turning up. And, you know, and then all the books that they're trying to get artist renderings to do sort of like, you know, the imagination version of what these animals look like. And it's just fun.
Do you do a lot of that when you're on tour, like try and go to as many museums as you can?
Yeah. I mean, I really, you know, when I'm on the road, I don't really do much. I play and I go back to the hotel and I don't really hang out or anything, but I do go to natural history museums and, you know, the few very specific dinosaur museums around. And I still haven't been to all of them. I haven't been to any museum in China, which I'm dying to do. And then there's a really great paleontological sort of destination in Argentina that is, you know, a few miles outside of where we normally stay when we're in like Buenos Aires. Mm-hmm. So it's always been too far to get to and get back in time to do a show. So I'm still looking to get out there. And then you also heard about the fire at the Brazilian Natural History Museum.
No, what happened?
One of the oldest museums. It just, I guess because of maintenance, whatever, it just caught on fire. So this is one of the oldest, it's definitely the oldest museum in the country, but it's one of the older museums in the world with very unique specimens to that country. Mm-hmm. Early humanoids, amphibian, all kinds of stuff. And so this only happened like last week. So I haven't heard what the total damage of the fire was, but a lot of people really mourning the potential loss of some really significant stuff there.
Lots of pieces, yeah, because that's a big area too when you think about it. I hadn't heard about that. I'll have to Google it. Favorite dinosaur?
I think it's still the Deinonychus. But, you know, it changes from time to time. I was really into the Spinosaurus until it became unhip to be into it.
Became a pit. You're a dinosaur nerd. Last couple of things. Are you doing anything with your production company still?
Yeah, I'm working away at it simultaneously with everything else. I'm juggling four different movie projects, but I did close two deals, so those two at least are, you know, greenlit, so to speak. So there's that. And I've been working on a cartoon for a while, and that one got picked up. So at some point in the next couple of years, that should be coming out. So Yeah, it's been very busy, but I'm very quiet about all that shit because until it's out there, you don't know if it's going to succeed. You know, even it's just getting things completed in this business is something, you know, is an accomplishment more difficult than anything I've done so far. So I just keep quiet about it until there's a release date.
There's so much to it, dude. Like, you know, first you get picked up and then you got to get it financed and then you get it made, and then you get it distributed and everything.
Yeah. There's just so many people involved and blah, 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 blah. And it's just slow. It's a very slow industry until the first check gets cut. That moves blinding. It's getting that check cut. That's the problem.
Is the cartoon with that cat in Toronto that we met, is his name Matt? Is that his name? The guy that you know in Toronto?
The guy from... it's not with anybody from Toronto.
Okay, gotcha.
I can't really say just yet who... No, I was working with the guy from Toronto on a movie, though.
Gotcha.
I'm not working with him anymore. So.
Okay, well, forget about him then. Last two questions for you, man. What was your favorite Guns N' Roses song to play that you hadn't played in years that was fun to get back into again when you did it, when you went out on this tour?
That's a good question. I know Strange, for sure, was on there.
Yeah.
Because I always liked playing that song. And then, you know, like Welcome to Jungle was a blast to play. I mean, just because it was such a major part of the set, and it was in the early part of the set, so we got things going really, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun to play. I mean, I could sit there and I could give you highlights, and I start going down the set list. It's a longer comment. There was no one song that I was like, "Oh, this is the pinnacle of my night," because every, you know, there's so much material on it. So we were playing like 3.5 hours.
But oh man, it was crazy.
So there was a lot of different material and a lot of cool things to play, you know, all throughout the set.
I thought it was really cool that you guys busted out some of those Chinese Democracy tunes.
Yeah, it was cool playing those songs and then, you know, like really turning it into something, you know, like being able to put your own 2 cents into it to make it your own. And it was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, they really came alive with you guys behind them. And I thought, especially like Chinese Democracy, the song itself almost sounded like one of your tunes when you got a hold of it.
The thing is the songs themselves are actually really, really cool. And so when you just, you know, sort of narrow it down to 2 guitars, bass and drums, just jamming those parts out, they really sort of they get a little bit more aggressive and whatnot. So, you know, but they're really good songs to begin with. So,
was that an Axl suggestion, or did you guys come up by committee, or did you suggest it, or do you even remember?
It was sort of like, you know, one of those things where, like, okay, Chinese Democracy obviously was a song that, as the Guns N' Roses song, whether I played on it or not. Mm-hmm. And so it just sort of started with that, like which songs off that record, which songs off this record, which songs off this record. And so Chinese Democracy was just like it was any of the other records.
Right. Well, it's very cool, man. I know you got to go rehearse with the Winnipeg Boys and with Miles and everybody.
Yeah.
You're going to be out for a long time. I know Duff is back with Loaded, and Axl may or may not be doing AC/DC. Will you guys reconvene with Guns N' Roses a year down the line and do some more work together?
Well, I mean, you know, all things considered, I mean, I've been asked that a million times. There's no set answer for that. I mean, I know that we're going to do something at some point in the not too distant future, but we haven't sat down and done it yet or anything like that. So, but it's definitely something that we're all want to do. So we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
For sure. But it's cool to like with the Conspirators. I mean, I just saw your European tour. You guys are playing big rooms with that band too. Like it's an arena level type venue.
It's
over there.
Some of it.
Yeah.
It's sort of a mixed bag. Like we're playing from clubs to arenas to festivals and, you know, but it translates in a festival setting or, you know, like when we're in Poland, we're playing at this arena over there that's like a full-size arena, and we managed to pull that off. So it's you know, it's good. It's cool. I like the variation on venues.
Because you just like to play. It doesn't matter to you, right?
Really, when it boils down to it, yeah. I was just thinking, even that club up in Aspen, Belly Up Club, right?
Played
there.
Yeah.
Which is probably the smallest venue in the circuit, right?
Right.
But it's blast to play there. It's like playing in someone's living room.
But and that's, it kind of takes you back to, you know, it's like a punk rock, take you back to your roots, playing the high school party type of a gig. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's fun when you come off stage, like, covered in sweat.
You're like leaning over to the guy in front of you going at the top of your lungs while your band's playing and you're playing the guitar and going, dude, you're on my foot.
when you get your hair cut and someone else's tuning pegs and all that sort of shit.
Yeah, exactly, right? You just really become one with the audience. All right, Chris. Well, listen,
all right, dude.
I will be in touch with you as we go, and I'm sure I'll see you at some point somewhere.
Great talking to you, man. And go try and learn a Triumph cover today. I think you should do that.
All right, man. Have a good one. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, dude. Thanks, Slashy. Talk to you soon, buddy.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
All right, thanks to Slash for coming back again. Such a great guest. Living the Dream, the new album from Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. It's out now, and the guys are on the road. The tour started this week. They've been playing for a while. They play in the Aftershock Festival in Sacramento on Sunday in a couple days, and a big hometown gig at the Palladium in Hollywood next Tuesday the 16th. That's a big room. All dates and ticket information at slashonline.com. That's slashonline.com. Go see Slash featuring Miles Kennedy, the Conspirators with Brent Fitz and Todd Kearns. You're not going to be disappointed. Great rock and roll band with a great rock and roll show. I got to warn you, though, they don't play a lot of Guns N' Roses tunes. They've got too many great songs of their own. And, of course, Slash always on the hunt for new dinosaur fossils and exhibits. So if you have any, hit him up on the Twitter at Slash and let him know where you can go for his paleontology needs. All right? Listen, you're not going to be disappointed by Slash. You're not going to be disappointed by Living the Dream. And you're not going to be disappointed if you're booked and ready to rock at Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Listen, guys, we are about 2 weeks away starting tomorrow. We're 2 weeks from tomorrow, and there's still a couple of cabins left. So I want you to live in the moment. Grab a final cabin at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Come join the fun. There's only a few left. Everything included in the price, all the food, concerts, live podcasts, stand-up shows, meet and greets, autograph sessions, wrestling matches, everything in between. The only things you pay for on board the ship are alcohol and gambling. So come hang out. We have got Corey Taylor just extended his set to 2 hours. Fozzie, we're putting together our special cover set that we're going to do the second night that we play, with a bunch of guests are going to come join us. Lots of special stuff. And of course, it's the grand big kahuna, the biggest main event of the year, the Alpha Club versus the Bullet Club. It's the Bucks of Jericho, or is it Y2 Jackson versus Kenny Omega, Cody and Marty Scurll. You're not going to see that anywhere else but on the ship of Jericho. It's a one-time only match. Then of course, Impact versus Ring of Honor, kicking it off. It's the No Rules deck fight, Sami Callihan versus Marty Scurll. Then we got LAX versus the Young Bucks, another dream match. Then we got a 10-man elimination war, Impact versus Bullet Club, Young Bucks, Cody, Marty Scurll, and Adam Page versus LAX, Sami Callihan, Brian Cage, and Johnny Impact. Don't forget about Bound for Glory this Sunday. Johnny Impact versus Austin Aries, who was here just a couple days ago. Go back and listen to that interview if you haven't. Austin's always a great guest. Big main event of Johnny Impact versus Austin Aries at Bound for Glory. But back to the Jericho Cruise. We've got Live Talk is Jericho with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Another Live Talk is Jericho Remembering Eddie Guerrero with Conan, Rey Mysterio, and DDP. Also the entire Bullet Club for Talk is Jericho. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler also Talk is Jericho. Lots of cool stuff going on with that. Mick Foley doing his 20 Years of Hell stand-up show. You're not going to want to miss that. Talking all about the crazy Hell in the Cell that changed his life 20 years ago against The Undertaker. Jim and Jerry will be doing their JR and the King live show. And don't forget Killing the Town versus Keeping It 100. That's Conan, Disco Inferno, and Shane Helms debating Paul Lazenby, Don Callis, and a special third member. You might not be expecting, but it's going to be hilarious. And of course, the first round of the Sea of Honor tournament has been announced. New brackets, since Jay Lethal is now the Ring of Honor champion. It's Dalton Castle versus Matt Taven, Chris Daniels versus Delirious, Marty Scurll versus Rhett Titus, Silas Young versus Flip Gordon, and bracket B, Mark Briscoe versus Will Ferrara, Adam Page versus Frankie Kazarian, Cheese Battle Guy versus Beer City Bruiser, Jay Briscoe versus Kenny King. Of course, we got Brandi Rhodes, Mandy Leon, Sumi Sakai, Jenny Rose from the Women of Honor. We got Jenny Rose versus James Ellsworth intergender match. We've got so many other matches too. I mean, Delirious versus Cody. We got the four-team elimination, four-team a tag war, four corners match.
so much stuff going on. Go to Chris Jericho Fozzy on my Instagram to see all those matches, or go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com to see the entire rundown. Don't forget, Melissa Santos is going to be there, Cruise director SoCal Val, special guest host Noel Foley, and then there's the live music. Fozzy doing three sets. Like I said, our second set is going to be all covers. Corey Taylor of Slipknot and Stone Sour doing a two-hour acoustic set. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, we just toured with them, and we toured with King as well, both great bands. Dave Spivak Project, the new DSP, Dave Spivak Project video, Cold Empty Streets is on YouTube now, go check that out. He's going to be there. The Darlings of Rock and Roll, Cherry Bombs, be doing some great performances. Shoot to Thrill, the world's greatest female AC/DC cover band. Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Ozzy cover band. I want to see both of them. Beyond the Darkness is going to be there. They're going to actually do a kind of a, I guess, kind of some kind of a paranormal seance almost. Dave Schrader told me he's going to lead his merry band of whoever's with them on the Beyond the Darkness pub crawl. They're going to try and raise a UFO from the bottom of the sea. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on there. Marty DeRosa will be doing some stand-up. Colt Cabana will be there. They're doing their Unprofessional Wrestling podcast and stand-up. And of course, live comedy from Brad Williams, Craig Gass, Sal and Q from the Impractical Jokers. So much stuff going on. It's going to be amazing. And also, we have a huge, huge announcement about Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea tomorrow, Friday morning. This is Thursday night. So it's today. If you're hearing this on Friday, if you're listening to it Thursday night beforehand, lots of stuff going. You're going to be very happy if you can't make it on the cruise, and you're going to be even happier if you are on the cruise. We are going to make this the greatest vacation of a lifetime. So go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book one of the final remaining cabins. It's going to be worth every single penny. And speaking of worth it, episode 500 coming up this Wednesday. I can't believe we're 500 episodes in, and one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite people, he's also a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. Who gives you the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer? Slash today at episode 499 and episode 500, possibly my favorite rock star of all time, one of my favorite people on the planet. I'm going to wait. I'm going to announce it later on this week, maybe this weekend. Episode 500, you are not going to want to miss it. It's huge. Thank you so much for listening to all 499 or one of them or anything in between. I do this for you guys. I appreciate you. We will see you for episode 500 on Wednesday. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Take me down to the Paradise City.
The Westwood One Podcast Network.